Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we've got some late news out of New Orleans that won't exactly have you screaming holy Toledo. We've got several NFL quarterbacking changes that we're going to ponder. You'll get that one. Think about it. And there's a home field aspect to the World Series that we don't think the markets have priced properly at all.
Let's start with first takes, Dave. And last night, a relatively light night in the sports betting world. What'd you see out there?
Well, first take for the second day in a row, not a memorable one for the right reasons, but for the wrong reasons. Yesterday's show, we had talked about what we thought the best of the board being a prop between the Jets and the Dolphins. Neither offense we thought was going to be able to have much big strike ability. So we thought under 42.5 yards for longest touchdown brought some value to it. Noting that one caveat that if we had a risk, it was going to be the special teams or the defense. So sitting at our favorite stool, far right at the Barrymore, great place to watch a Monday night football game, soon to become the official restaurant of Vegas Sports Day, we're sitting and watching, and one of the things that you like is when a team is near the goal line, the chances of a turnover being scooped up and returned are problematic. It's unlikely to happen. But this was Matt Moore. It was Darrell Revis. The officials let him get away with a little bit of physical play on that one memorable moment, but there goes the first play of the day for the wrong reasons, but obviously it's etched in our memory. Teddy, I hope you bring something better from Monday.
Well, for Monday, for me at least, Dave, I got some feedback from yesterday's show, and the bottom line is I got to make fun of myself right now. I did yesterday's show. I felt like I had a stick up my ass the entire time. I was like, rah, 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 rah. So the goal for
I had no idea why that prop was there, mind you. I didn't know. So it had purpose.
Yeah.
Okay.
So no sticks up my ass today. The goal is relax, have fun, and give out quality sports information knowledge for those of you out in viewer land. And let's start right here with Market Watch for today's opening numbers. We have new lines from the Monday night football teams. Let's start with the Chargers and the Jets. Big move on this ball game, Dave. We saw the Jets open 1.5-point favorites, 45.5 the total. Now, the favorite has switched. San Diego, -1.5, even -2 in some spots. The early money on the total is pushing that number down, 44.5 in several key locations. And meanwhile, we have the Dolphins as favorites this coming week, which has been a problem for the markets. The Miami open 3, bet down to 2. The total there moving up from 42.5 up to the current number of 43. Those are the Monday night openers.
Not that surprised to see what happened with the San Diego Jets line. That was one of those put the phone down or hang up moments and get in play this morning. That 1.5 was awfully high. A couple things come into play. Yesterday's show, we talked about the difficulty the Jets were having. Run defense and their own inability to run the ball. The two ground and pound elements that are usually going to be the key to that team being successful, we still didn't see that last night. You look at Sean Green, LaDainian Tomlinson, add their rushing attempts up, only 3.5 per carry. So we still didn't see that the Jets were necessarily any better last night. That was more a case of Miami losing than the Jets winning. But San Diego, much like last year, playing well through injuries, now getting healthy again. Teddy, Antonio Gates was at practice yesterday. That makes a big difference.
Yeah, very, very good sign for the Chargers with Gates on the field, because the bottom line is that offense just doesn't work the same way in the red zone without him. But we also have to talk here about Miami. I mean, the winless Dolphins sitting right now with no quarterback for the future, no head coach for the future. I need to ask here, can Tony Sparano, what's the point of keeping him around right now? Sparano, of course, was almost fired this past offseason. Miami made a big move or overtures towards Jim Harbaugh, who ended up in San Francisco. Dolphins didn't obviously get Harbaugh as their head coach. Said, Sperano, come back for your final year. You can fill out your last vestiges of your contract. Well, now winless, how long do they keep Sperano as the head coach? Because in my mind, it's time to let him go to greener pastures. I don't think we'll ever see Tony Sperano as a head coach in the NFL again.
Yeah, you're kind of one of these awkward positions, if you're Miami, that the best thing you can do the rest of this season is lose. Your biggest weakness right now, if you're going to start to rebuild, is the quarterback position. There's Andrew Luck out there waiting for you. Now, you've got a little bit of leeway in that some of the teams that you'll be competing with for that Andrew Luck, in terms of the standings, aren't looking for Luck. Teams like the Vikings, the Panthers, teams that are going to have very bad years, Jacksonville, who already have their quarterbacks of the future in place, or so they believe. So losing actually would help, but at the same time, you've got a lot of home games left. You've got to find ways to get people in the seats. Is there any way Esperano firing can help from that standpoint? Obviously, Matt Moore playing is not going to bring a sex appeal. Is there anything you can do with Esperano that might help to draw?
Well, Miami wasn't drawing when they were good. You know, I mean, it's one of the weaker NFL stadiums, certainly, and that's been a problem for the Dolphins for quite some time. So the revenue isn't quite what the revenue is for some of the more prosperous franchises. It's not a place where there's been a lot of winning for the last, two decades or so, basically since the end of Dan Marino, and even the end of the Marino era wasn't a positive sign for Miami. So in my mind, it's a complete tear-down, rebuild job for the Dolphins. I'm not convinced that the inevitable firing of Tony Sperano hasn't happened yet, but it will. But I'm not convinced that firing is going to be a big difference maker. We value your feedback. We got some great forum questions yesterday, some great emails. Keep them coming, folks. Send those emails in, sportsday@covers.com. We're going to answer viewer questions every day. Again, sportsday@covers.com. That toll-free listener rant line, Craziest Rant, goes on air tomorrow, 866-966-4599. And, of course, get involved in the covers.com community. Active thread in the posting forum going right now at covers.com/posting forum. When we come back, post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David, you should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Let's start with Georgia Tech. This is what you saw from the Yellow Jackets, or what you've seen from the Yellow Jackets so far this season. Few greater headaches in college football than going up against the option package of Paul Johnson, who was a winner everywhere he's been, including here at Georgia Tech. And he runs that triple option system with as much sophistication as anybody in college football. But this year, there's a little bit of an added wrinkle. They've gotten quality quarterback play from Tevin Washington, and the Yellow Jackets, number 3 in the nation in pass efficiency and number 1 in the nation in yards per pass attempt. A whopping 13.4 yards per pass attempt, number 1 in the country. Now, just to put that 13.4 yards per attempt in perspective, let's see. Last year, no team in the country averaged more than 10.5 yards per attempt. In 2009, 10.4 yards per attempt was the high for any team in the country. In 2008, it was 10. In 2007, 9.4 yards per attempt. So, Dave, we haven't seen a passing game this efficient at any point in the last half decade or so. What's going on here with this Georgia Tech passing numbers?
Truth is, they can't throw a lick, as we're going to find out in the weeks ahead. So consider this juxtaposition. As Teddy mentioned, number 3 in the nation in passing efficiency. You're going to see those numbers. People are going to write about those numbers. People on the air are going to talk about those numbers. They're dynamic. Those yards per attempt, they're fabulous. But how did those numbers come about? They had an early cycle of non-conference opponents that didn't game plan that hard for Tech. They led receivers wide open down the field by confused defenses. Tevin Washington made a few plays, and it was very dynamic. But now look what happens in ACC play against teams that understand this Johnson playbook a little bit better, especially now as Johnson has been there for multiple seasons and defensive coordinators have a lot to fall back on. Here's what they're finding out. Tevin Washington, the worst option runner at quarterback that Johnson has had. Only 3.6 yards per attempt, not a guy who's going to break tackles, and also someone who doesn't make great decisions running the option. Therefore, you allow him to hold the ball, whether it's going to be to pass or run. You focus on stopping the others. So what's happened the last 3 weeks? Take a look at these passing numbers. 12 out of 41, 155 yards, and 3 interceptions. If we take those 3 games and extrapolate them and make that the model for Georgia Tech, they go from number 3 in the nation in passing efficiency to dead last, number 120. So if you go into the autopsy room the right way and you pull out that information, over the last 3 weeks, this has been the worst passing offense in college football. That's a long way from that number 3 that you're going to hear everywhere else. This week's game at Miami is priced like the number 3 is real, not the number 120. The eternal conundrum when you're breaking down football is good offense, bad defense. And we've got a prime example from Sunday that we've got to bring to your attention and break down. If you saw the box score of the Buffalo Giants game and didn't watch the game, you see 2 big home run plays by that Buffalo offense. An 80-yard touchdown run by Fred Jackson. Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's a 60-yard touchdown pass. So now we've got to break that down. Going forward, were these big plays made by the Buffalo offense that we have to incorporate into our thought process? Keep in mind, that run by Jackson, that's worth 5 yards per game when the season's over. Halfway in the season, 10 yards per game on their totals. Was that really good offense? Or, Teddy, was that bad New York Giants defense?
Yeah, the bottom line, Dave, that was very bad defense by the New York Giants. I mean, you talked about the impact of these numbers on Buffalo's current statistics, and they're going to have an impact throughout the course of the entire season. But the box score can't show you. The databases really won't tell you. Simple bad defense. I mean, Fred Jackson, a simple off tackle. Deion Grant took a bad angle. Boom. Next thing you know, Fred Jackson scampering 80 yards for the TD. It was a play designed to gain 3 yards for Buffalo in this instance. It gained 80. All bad defense by the Giants. Similarly, you look at the pass play to Roosevelt. It was a simple slant. They were looking to get a first down. What happened? Again, bad angles from that very inexperienced Giants secondary. Roosevelt catches, turns, boom. He's racing 66 yards to the end zone for the tutty. Bottom line is, the Bills passing game going to get some explosive looking numbers. The Bills running game going to get some explosive looking numbers. The stats are going to lie here. This was all about the Giants playing bad defense.
When we come back, we're going to go into the forums and answer a very good question that may be one of the most important things you could ever talk about in terms of gambling, then a trip inside the numbers. It's Tuesday. We've got bagels from Harry's, and you're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
We had, before we get inside the numbers, Dave, we got to go and talk about some of the emails and forum questions that we got from yesterday's show and answer at least one of those questions today. We got some great email questions. We're going to hold off until tomorrow to answer those because of this forum question that is going to, I guess, come down to some debate for us, Dave. We've got a discussion what to do here with this particular question from Vegas Jack, a gaming correspondent for the Sports Network in the covers.com posting forum. He asked, do either of you believe that the more time you put into a wager, the more of the luck factor is eliminated? Or do you believe at the end of the day, there's only so much work you can do, but a large portion of winning still comes down to luck being on your side? The luck question, Dave. We've been talking about Andrew Luck. Now let's talk about real luck. What's your answer?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most important things that we can get into because, yes, we do try to handicap for luck. But one of the things he alluded to is the idea that the better work you do, the more good luck you can have. What you're trying to do in your handicapping is not increase good luck, but try to eliminate bad luck where possible. Here's your problem going forward. The better work you do, the unluckier you will appear to be. And you have to understand where we're going with this. When you handicap a game the right way, you're going to get a lot of easy wins. When you're flipping a coin, you get a lot of randomness in play. So the idea is eliminate flipping that coin. Get to the easy wins. Here's the problem, though. When you're handicapping right, you're usually in a position where only bad luck will beat you. Or not only bad luck, where bad luck would be the key factor if you're going to lose. We talked about the under 42.5 yards last night. Neither offense produced much big the entire game. Our jeopardy was the potential for the special teams and the defense. Good handicapping is going to create some bad luck losers. What good handicapping will not create are good luck winners, because you're not putting yourself in that position. If you're right in your breakdown and your team's in a comfortable position, you're not going to be sitting there needing that luck to work for you.
Yeah, but I mean, the old argument, Dave, is that when we talk about gambling and luck, they say the harder you work, the luckier you get. That's the old the adage out there. And I'm with you 100%. It's almost like poker in that analogy. And I know a lot of you guys out there play poker. The better poker player you are, the more bad beats you're going to take, because you're going to be in position to win the pot. And the only thing that can cost you to lose it is a bad card on the river. You know, someone sucking out on you, you know, one of those miracle ace on the river type of a deals, or they catch that diamond, or they fill the inside straight, or they hit their set, or whatever it is that a worse player with worse cards than you is going to get for that last river card. And in some ways, as you mentioned and you alluded to, Dave, sports betting's the same way. The better you are means the more right sides you're going to have, which also means that you have the potential to lose some of those bets, some of those right side bets, when things don't break right late in the game, in the fourth quarter. It happened to me a couple times this last week, and it's going to happen to everyone out there. Luck is going to always be a factor in sports betting. The goal is get yourself on the right side of those lucky decisions as often as you can.
Here's what we're going to talk about so much on this particular show, though, that will address that luck element. It's finding the areas where what we quote as luck, bad bounces, awkward settings come into play, try to reduce them or anticipate them. We're coming to the end of the Major League Baseball season. We get back to baseball next year. You're going to hear us talking about bullpens a lot. Unlucky to lose a game when you give up two in the ninth. Lucky to win a game where you get three in the ninth. When you focus on bullpen fatigue, making sure that the better relievers are rested, you're trying to move into that prime luck element. In football, if we've got games that are priced closely, that pick'em range where you're only being asked to pick the winner of the game, do we see a team that brings endgame elements that are positive, or a team that has negative endgame elements? One of the things you will not see us do much on this show is taking a bad quarterback as a short road underdog, like a Matt Moore last night, because that's where you can have bad luck happen. If you're a road underdog, you're expecting to be losing the game at some point in the second half. If you've got the bad quarterback, or someone who's mistake prone, put in that position, playing from behind, pick sixes, and those sort of things can happen. It may look like bad luck, but you want to anticipate it up front. And in college basketball, we're going to talk point guards and coaches at the end of these close games. So we're going to play with this tangent an awful lot over time, but it's an awfully good question for us to address.
And you can reach us every single day via email. You can also get involved in the chat on the Covers posting forum. That's where we got today's question from. And while you're in that Covers posting forum, you're only a click away from the Covers King of the World Series. Showcase your baseball knowledge, and you can put $1,000 cash in your pocket right here in the month of October as the World Series goes on. Now, Dave, it's time to go inside the numbers on Tuesday.
We're going to be talking about the World Series a little bit later in today's show, and giving you a little tip so you'll probably see where we're going because of this segment. The home field advantage that St. Louis has isn't really showing up much in the price when we see Texas as a prohibitive favorite. But there's a key element to the way this lays out that we don't think is being appreciated properly. Jaime Garcia, right now, being slated to pitch games number 2 and 6 for the Cardinals, both in Busch Stadium. Why does that matter? Because Jaime Garcia has one of the biggest home-away biases of any starting pitcher in the major leagues. So for Tuesday's Inside the Numbers, let's take a look at how Jaime Garcia has performed in Busch Stadium as opposed to on the road, and you're going to see how wide that gap is. In his career, his earn run average, 2.37 at home versus 4.28 on the road. That's almost two full runs per nine innings. The whip, the walks and hits per innings pitched, that correlates to that earn run average. And look at the walks per nine. Big gap between home and away. It shows how much more confidence he pitches with from this home mound at Busch Stadium. That's a big, big part of why this home field advantage has not been factored in properly. And we're going to talk about this as the show goes on.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
And let's start with our insider six-pack. Dave, you got to make the noise with me. Come on, let's hear it. One time. One out of you.
I only drink things that come out of bottles.
So make the this way. You don't have to pop the top. You can twist the top. You want a bottle opener? Make a noise this way, however you want to do it.
Bob Toledo's unemployed. And all he wants to do is talk about sound effects.
Yeah, insider six-pack. Let's go with six tidbits of knowledge for you on a Tuesday. We're going to start with Tulane and Bob Toledo. You can see this one coming. Bob Toledo, 15-40 during his tenure as the Tulane Green Wave head coach. Well, he's out. Four-plus seasons. Wasn't a real good tenure, shall we say, for Toledo. Kind of like how his tenure at UCLA went. But the bottom line, probably the last straw, I should say, was this last Saturday's 44-7 loss at home to UTEP. Toledo is going to be replaced by offensive line coach and co-offensive coordinator Mark Houston. Now, is it one of these situations where Tulane really wanted Toledo gone now? Or maybe it's a situation with Tulane playing at home for homecoming this weekend, looking to mollify or placate their limited fan base. That may well be the case in terms of the timing for Toledo's firing.
It's going to be real fun to watch that over the course of the days. It's how it's perceived. Did they allow him to resign, or was he fired? It's the same thing. There's the door. Go to it. Houston Nutt will watch this very carefully because his own press conference for a similar manner might be coming up before the end of the season at Ole Miss. Troubled times for Nutt. What hopefully was going to be a good news week, the return of several players who were suspended for the Alabama game. Brandon Bolden, A.J. Hawkins, Philander Moore, all reinstated to the program yesterday. The bad news, an already struggling defense lost two cogs that they really can't replace. Marcus Temple in the secondary, Wayne Dorsey defensive end, both seniors, both good guys in the huddle. Going to be difficult replacing them on the field. And someone we will not see in an Ole Miss uniform again, Melvin Harris. He was a leading returning receiver from last year. Enough was enough with Harris. Houston Nutt dismisses him from the program yesterday. Maybe we see him playing for a Division II school next year, but he's gone.
Let's go to Hawaii, or actually to New Mexico State in Hawaii this week. That's the late night bailout special, or the night owl special, whatever you want to call it, the last college football game on Saturday. And, of course, New Mexico State, well, surprise, surprise, they've got some quarterback issues for the coming week. This is a team that already lost their starting quarterback, Andrew Manley, earlier in the season. He's going to be granted a medical redshirt and will be back for the Aggies next year. Well, the senior QB and the former starter who came in to replace Manley when he got hurt, Matt Christian, well, he went down, injured his left shoulder in the win over Idaho, the thrilling win over Idaho last week, 31-24, goal line stand by the Aggies at the end of that ballgame to propel them to victory. But the bottom line is Christian is hurt right now, and that leaves true freshman Trevon Caldwell at number one on the depth chart in practice this week while Christian recuperates. Caldwell was 7 of 9 for 100 yards against Idaho this past weekend. But now, with New Mexico State traveling to Hawaii, they're 22-point dogs in that game. You just wonder if Dwayne Walker maybe wants to give Christian an extra week to get healthy, and maybe we see Caldwell here. We'll have to monitor this one as the week progresses.
It can never be good news when a coach has to explain a player's injury and say that he's not on the trading block. That's what Fritz Schirmer is having to do in Cleveland right now. A very disappointing season for Peyton Hillis. Almost 1,200 yards last year, 11 touchdowns, 4.4 per carry. So far this season, only 211 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 full yard less per carry. He took a lot of heat a couple of weeks ago when he sat out of a game because of strep throat. You don't think a fullback's doing that. Bronco Nagurski, Jim Brown, they were not going to miss a game for strep throat. So now he doesn't play much against Oakland on Sunday. There's a hamstring injury that starts to circulate. So now questions come up. Was he really hurt? Is there something going on behind the scenes? Got so bad, Schirmer actually had to make these comments publicly yesterday. You can be assured he had a hamstring injury. That you can be assured of. Again, a coach shouldn't have to come out and say that. Following up with, I don't want to talk about trades. No, he's not on the training block. That's an awkward position for Schirmer to have to be in, probably more than meets the eye with what's going on in the Cleveland locker room.
Well, that'll teach Peyton Hillis to be on the cover of Madden. It's the Madden jinx working again. May even be bigger than the Sports Illustrated jinx these days, Dave. But let's go to Washington, where Mike Shanahan has announced that he'll make his starting quarterback decision on Wednesday. However, some other factors may well influence this decision a little bit, namely the injuries that are now in play for the Redskins on the offensive line. Left guard Corey Lichtensteiger, he's lost for the season with torn knee ligaments. Left tackle Trent Williams will miss at least the next 2 weeks with a sprained right ankle. And the tight end Chris Cooley out indefinitely with a broken left index finger. This could mean, guys, that there's only one offensive line starter for the Redskins playing in his original position to start the season when Washington takes the field this Sunday.
Also awkward for Mike Shanahan, reflective more of the media age that we're in, some of the public comments that the receivers for the Redskins have already made about Rex Grossman. We're going to quote a couple of these because they're out there for everybody to see. First from Jabbar Gaffney, who was a teammate of Grossman's at the University of Florida. We're behind him. We know what he can do. That was one game. He'll get back to work. But how about this from Santana Moss? I think he deserves the start. Vic threw 4 picks last week, came back and had a hell of a game. Tom Brady threw 4 picks. I just feel like you can't just give up on a guy because he had a bad outing. You've got a wide receiver for your football team that's comparing Rex Grossman to Michael Vick and Tom Brady. How much are you going to trust that guy to execute a game plan? Classic example where if we have a sports book or we have a casino and this gentleman wants to come and play, the limo doesn't pick him up at the airport. The limo picks him up at his house.
Yeah. I was thinking they're going to fly him to the helicopter pad on the roof. Wednesday is going to be the day that Mike Shanahan's going to announce his quarterback decision. Wednesday also going to be the day that Leslie Frazier is going to announce who's going to be starting for the Minnesota Vikings at the quarterback position this coming weekend. The decision between Donovan McNabb and Christian Ponder. Of course, this is something of a different decision. Shanahan has to determine who can carry Washington to the playoffs. Minnesota and Frazier have to consider, well, what do we do in terms of how do we get Christian Ponder into this lineup at an appropriate time. Now, benching McNabb might be the same equivalent as releasing him. I don't think that he'll see the field again if a Christian Ponder gets the start here, unless, of course, Ponder gets hurt. But do you give Ponder his first start against this class of competition, of course, going against Dom Capers' blitzes and the defending Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers this coming weekend, or do you maybe wait until after the bye, give Ponder a little bit of extra time to get ready, and give him a much weaker class of defense to go up for Minnesota? What decision would you make, Dave?
Well, think about this. Donovan McNabb made a couple of Pro Bowls. If Christian Ponder starts this week, this could be the quietest bow out for April, because we won't see McNabb again anywhere. It could be the quietest bow out that we've ever seen for a former Pro Bowl quarterback.
The quietest? No, we've seen some pretty quiet bow outs.
Yeah, middle of the season, just dropped and drift away for a Pro Bowler. Emailers, if you've seen some, send them in. I would be curious to know.
That's a good question. I'm sure there's some examples out there. I can't think of them offhand, of course, because we're live on air. And we come back live on air. Guess what? It's money time right after this short message. Yeah.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Let's go to Jonesboro, Arkansas today, where Florida International is taking on Arkansas State. Right now, the number, the Red Wolves of Arkansas State, -3, over under 53.5.
Sunbelt doesn't get to show itself very often, but they've got a nice matchup for their first outing on national TV this year. These two teams played a classic. It was the end of the season last year. Florida International had to win the game to clinch at least the tie for the conference championship. Trailing 24-23, less than 2 minutes left, Wesley Carroll, T.Y. Hilton hook up on a 42-yard touchdown pass. FIU wins the game and goes bowling. It's going to be Carroll and Hilton again, one of the more dynamic combinations in college football. Hilton on his way to the NFL, but they'll have to trade points tonight. Look at the other side of this equation. Ryan Applin, the Arkansas State quarterback, having a terrific season. But Dwayne Frampton, almost emulating Hilton in productivity, his first two conference games, 22 catches, 223 yards. We're going to see a lot of pitch and catch tonight, Eddie, if the circumstances allow for it. They call it the Sun Belt, but that's not exactly what it's going to be like tonight in Jonesboro.
No, let's take a look at that weather forecast, Dave, for tonight in Jonesboro. Let's see. Rainy morning turns into a cool evening. Game time temperatures could fall into the upper 40s, winds in double digits. No, it's not going to be a sunny night in Jonesboro, Arkansas tonight, or a warm night in Jones. It's going to be cold football weather, I guess is what we have to call it, Dave. In general, when we talk about the Sun Belt Conference, my gut reaction is always, hey, take a look at taking the points. We haven't seen dominant teams in the Sun Belt, with the exception of perhaps Troy for a couple of seasons. But with the rest of the conference, that's been a dog-happy conference, and I've made money over the years and this year betting some of these Sun Belt dogs. But this is one instance where I think the betting public may be overvaluing Florida International. Of course, they've seen Florida International on TV before. We saw FIU go to Louisville and T.Y. Hilton have a big game, and they were able to win outright on the road as double-digit dog against the Cardinals. They also had a kind of a signature win in the game against Central Florida, where I guess the key play was a muff punt by UCF, but the bottom line was that Florida International's defense was strong enough to get them to win that game. However, in three games since those two victories against higher-profile foes, we've seen FIU look really overvalued in the betting markets. They haven't really sniffed a point spread cover, 0-3 ATS in their last three tries. The market got hot on this team, and now maybe the market's gotten too hot on this team. Meanwhile, Arkansas State, they've been an undervalued commodity all year, Dave. They've gone 5-1 against the number, and they've yet to play on TV, which means that a lot of folks haven't seen what they're capable of doing.
I think the big question for Florida International tonight is one of poise and character. We had talked about them tying for the conference championship last year, getting to a bowl game. That was the first winning season they had ever had. They've got a conference loss already. Arkansas State, UL Lafayette, they're unbeaten in the Sun Belt. That makes this an awfully big game. So big that we caught this from Mariel Cristobal. It's like playoff football. That's what it is. Okay, that's a lot of pressure to put on your kids this early in the season, especially kids who were terrific in 2010, but don't have a winning legacy behind them. This pressure might lead them to come out a little bit tight tonight. Keep in mind that when we talk about the A-level programs in a pressure game, we're expecting them to step up under that spotlight. At the C-minus level, sometimes pressure has the opposite effect. They come out a little nervous and a little tight. We're going to watch the early stages for FIU tonight and see if that might be the case.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that FIU is one of the types of teams that's going to be a little bit tight. They've looked loose in big games before, and as you mentioned, they found a way to win last year with a conference title on the line. That being said, you know, Arkansas State, they've been an undervalued commodity, and I'm certainly not going to look to go against the Red Wolves. I don't know the market's quite caught up with what they're trying to do, especially with the money today coming on FIU. Now, let's go to the World Series. I mean, you know, this is what we got to be talking about right now. Texas, -160 on the current World Series line, not for game one, but for the series itself. And Dave, what do you think? Is that number appropriate, or is that number a little bit too high?
We're going to do game one of this series tomorrow and break down the Carpenter-Wilson matchup, although that does feed into what we're going to talk about directly here. We alluded a little bit on yesterday's show to the way the markets have reacted to Texas. We just told you about Jaime Garcia in our Inside the Number segment. Yeah, we think this line is high. Here's what's happened. You know, Texas was a front runner all season. Great starting lineup, adequate rotation, and then they put a very good bullpen together. But while they were in the spotlight, no one noticed St. Louis. There was a terrific run by the Cardinals in September that was way, way under the radar. Take a little look at just how good they were, though. They go 30-13 in the last 43 games. Now, elevate that, though. Almost half of those games, 21 of the 43, were against the Phillies and the Brewers. They went 15-6 against those two powers, including 10-3 on the road. If you can do that against two teams that are every bit as good as Texas, the Phillies were actually better than Texas because of their starting rotation. If you can do that, you're not taking this price at home. This is a case where we believe the markets are wrong, and it gets to one of the things that we'll talk about on this show a lot in terms of betting. Are we necessarily saying that St. Louis will win this World Series, or are we saying that at plus $1.40, you've got an excellent value bet to make?
And really, that's the bottom line for me, Dave. It's not that St. Louis should be a favorite in this series, not that St. Louis... And of course, we're not saying they're not going to should be a favorite. That means that they're not likely to win it. Texas is likely to win it. But at plus 140, that's real legitimate value on the Cardinals. Not a win you're gonna. It's not a bet you're going to win every time. But you should win it more than 42% of the time, which is what you need to break even on that particular type of wager. At plus 140, there's simply too much value to ignore with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, we can put two parts of the equation, and your best bets are when you have two parts. You can play on the Cardinals with that momentum. This Texas pitching staff, though, when we get to tomorrow, we're going to talk about how bad C.J. Wilson struggled down the stretch. Only twice in the playoffs in 10 games has Texas had a starter even finish the sixth inning. So, Teddy, at plus 140, is this good enough for...
Today's play of the day, and it's absolutely good enough, Dave. We're going to talk about the St. Louis Cardinals plus 140 as the World Series price. That's going to be the play of the day for Tuesday, October 18th. And that, of course, is going to wrap it up for today's edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join Dave and I on the Vegas Sports Day podcast. We'll see you again tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks so much. Enjoy the games and good luck.